Hello, and welcome to What Comes to Mind, Season 2 of The Psychonaut Show. This is John K. Burton, MD, psychiatrist, psychoanalyst, and your host on this podcast that brings ideas from the history of psychoanalysis to solve problems in everyday life. In this episode, we're going to explore the principle of multiple function. Now, you know that I think these psychoanalytic concepts sound like they often come out of a parallel universe or a magical world, but I'm starting to think that I'm the only one that thinks that. I looked around and I did find that there is a principle of artificianimate quasi-dominance in Harry Potter. And that principle says why things go wrong when wizards try to make living things out of thin air. But I'm convinced that there are some other important magical principles, like in the series The Magicians, if you've maybe seen that on TV or you've read it, or in Isaac Asimov's Foundation trilogy about psychohistory. But I was really having some trouble finding these, so if you can think of a sci-fi or fantasy principle, let me know. But in the magical world of psychoanalysis, the principle of multiple function is the idea that we do things for not just one reason, but for many, and sometimes all at the same time. Now, this principle is helpful, especially whenever we are questioning our own motivations, because if we look at the fact that an action or a decision can have more than just one motivation, it frees us to act more effectively and easily in our lives. I'm going to tell you about a guy who couldn't seem to get to the gym or get into a workout routine of any kind, and the principle of multiple function helped him to get his psyche unstuck and get into an exercise program. Now, this might seem like a minor issue in life, but actually for a lot of people, exercise and working out are tied to deeper psychological issues. And in fact, we'll talk more about this in an upcoming episode on Freud's concept of the body ego this season. For a lot of us, these issues around our physicality relate to other issues that we have in life. And that was the case for this man as well. Now, he was in his mid-20s, and he had been dumped by a girl he met in high school that he had been dating since high school. His high school sweetheart, actually. And he just couldn't imagine that any other woman would have him. He was very intelligent and well-educated, and he was also very ambitious. But despite all of that, he was socially anxious and spent a lot of time alone in his apartment. And as well, despite his drive and his ambition, he just couldn't figure out what he wanted to do for a living. He was just quite stuck. And he had the idea that going to the gym would help him feel more confident and be more social and feel more attractive to women. But he worried about his motivation for going to the gym. He worried that he was really going to the gym because he wanted to show off. Now, obviously, this man was the furthest from a show-off you could ever imagine, but that was his concern, that that's what he would be doing it for. And he worried further that he would turn out like those jerks who just think women automatically should like them, who show off their bodies and treat other people badly and only think about themselves. Before we see how the principle of multiple function helped this person figure out his problem, let's look a little more deeply into the theory behind it. The principle of multiple function was developed by a psychoanalyst by the name of Robert Welder, who was in Freud's circle, one of his protégés. And the principle of multiple function, I think of kind of as a bit of a one-hit wonder for him. Like that song you know really well. Or this one. I get no doubt, but I go again. Or this one. And it seems like it should be some famous band, but you look it up and you've never heard of them before. And Robert Walder's principle of multiple function might be one of those one-hit wonders. But like many of these one-hit wonder bands, when you look them up, they actually have kind of an interesting story. And Robert Welder has his own, and we'll talk about that in a little bit. Anyway, Welder built on the idea of overdeterminism. And maybe I should have called the episode Overdeterminism, because actually that's a little bit more accurate in terms of what we're talking about. But I like the title, The Principle of Multiple Function, best. And it does fit, and we'll talk specifically about that and what's the difference. Overdeterminism is the idea that Freud developed to understand anxiety. Now, Freud realized that anxiety, which obviously we all have from time to time, some more than others, anxiety can be the result of pent-up, frustrated libido. That was his original theory. But he also realized that anxiety could come as a signal of underlying conflict. Now, one source of the anxiety here is the id, the pent-up, frustrated libido, and the other one would be the ego. The ego is signaling that there is a danger from unconscious conflict. Now, these things seem like they are the opposite, the ego on one side, the id on the other. But Freud said that both can be true. And that means that anxiety is overdetermined. It isn't determined by just one thing. And we can also see overdeterminism in other aspects of psychic life, like dreams, for example. How often have you heard someone say, or you yourself have felt, a dream, and you said, you know, I was in my house, but it wasn't my house. It means that it can stand for different things at the same time. It's overdetermined. So Freud had this idea of overdeterminism, but it created some confusion. People argued about how many could there be. Was it just the id and the ego? Could there be infinite different kinds of motivations that would make things overdetermined? And Welder developed his idea of the principle of multiple function to settle the matter once and for all. And he said that every psychic act, every thought, every idea, every action has exactly 8 motivations that the ego or the I has to meet. And I find that so delightfully positivist and certain, that number 8. It's no more and no less. It's the number of perfection in the tarot, according to Alejandro Jodorowsky, who I think we've talked about before, and if not, we definitely will. But 8 comes from Freud's model of the mind, which actually is going to be the topic of the next episode, because it's so basic and fundamental, and I haven't done it, and it's really time that we get into the model of the mind that includes the ego, superego, and id. And the principle of multiple function is based on this, that there are 4 agencies who make a demand on the ego. There is the 1, the outer world, reality, 2, the id, 3, the superego, and 4, the repetition compulsion, which is something found in the ego, which also is probably something that needs its own episode. It's the repetition compulsion was an idea of Freud that he had a lot of different ideas about, some contradictory. Other people have written about a lot of controversy, and it's kind of confusing. But let's just for now say that the repetition compulsion is a force that is found in the ego itself. So there are these 4 demands by each of these agencies upon the ego, and then 4 that the ego assigns to itself. Now, we don't need to go into all the nuts and bolts of what is a task assigned by the ego and what is a task assigned to the ego. That's getting a little bit esoteric, I think. The most important point here is to think that the id wants its drives gratified, while the superego wants to be obeyed. And the outer world has social and physical laws that constrain possibility. And the repetition compulsion basically pulls us to do the things that we are familiar with. So everything we think, everything we imagine, everything we feel has to fit each of the demands of these 4 agencies. So it's an incredible task for the ego, particularly when you realize that a lot of these agencies are in conflict with each other, and their demands are even the opposite, most obviously the id and the superego, but it can be other things as well. And Welder said maybe this is why we, quote-unquote, civilized humans find ourselves in a constant state of dissatisfaction, because everything we do ends up being a compromise. But the principle of multiple function helps, because when we think that we have a bad, quote-unquote, reason for doing something, like this man worried that he wanted to go to the gym maybe just to show off and to be exhibitionistic and think only of himself, it doesn't obliterate the other motivation. It doesn't mean that we shouldn't go ahead and do that thing. Yes, there might be some irrational or irrelevant motivations, but we may also have other constructive and healthy motivations as well. So let's go back to this guy who couldn't get himself to the gym because he was worried that he wanted to work out in order to show off like these jerks that he saw and to be superficial. And for him, working out represented being potentially aggressive, treating other people not well, thinking only of himself, and also being potentially seductive towards women. And feeling that he was exhibitionistic, again, showing off. These are all id drives. These are all the things that come from that part of the mind, the things that we want, those instincts. But he was also able to realize through the principle of multiple function that he had other motivations as well. The superego wanted him to be healthy. It wanted him to have a partner. It wanted him to get on with his career. And the repetition compulsion, we might think of, well, he was repeating something in his habit of avoidance, staying in his apartment, but that it would change from that to a habit of health and exercise through a routine of working out. And of course, reality said that he had to get out somehow in order to be paid attention to and in order to get on with a career. So once the id drives, once the id motivations were part of a team, it wasn't so bad anymore. The principle of multiple function allowed him to tell himself that he wants to look good, but it's not the only thing he wants. And when it's combined with all these other things, it's not bad anyway. It's all healthy, a desire to feel good about oneself, to connect, to find a partner and be out in the world. It's all of those things, the id, the superego, the outer world, and the repetition compulsion. Thinking of the principle of multiple function put the motivation in its place and allowed it to evolve and be in line with all of the other motivations. And by the way, as he was freed up to just go ahead and start a workout routine, he also became freed up to follow his ambitions, to follow that manifestation of his necessary aggressive drives that had been blocked before. So remembering the principle of multiple function in general frees us from our fear of action, because we don't have to worry about just having one motivation if there's one motivation we're aware of and we don't like it. There are others. Now, not all of the 8 motivations that Welder put forward are going to be solved equally well all of the time. And Welder said rather touchingly, I think, in this paper that's otherwise rather dry and academic, that of all of the psychological experiences that we can have, love is the one that solves the 8 demands the best. And I think that's a little buried nugget there that is good for us to remember. Now, a warning here is that the principle of multiple function doesn't mean that there is a real motivation that we don't know when we think it's one thing and that it's not. Remember the first episode when I talked about the psychoanalyst who heard about this podcast and worried that people are going to go around thinking they could understand one another? Well, if there is something to that fear, it's this, that someone will say, oh, you don't want it for that reason, you want it for this reason. And have you ever had someone tell you that, tell you, you don't mean this, you mean that? It's very aggravating when people do that. And ironically, this happens a lot among psychoanalysts and therapists. Now, when I was in training, I didn't have my own couch. I was renting part-time from someone else, subletting. And this person just had a regular couch, not an analytic couch where one could lie down easily. It had arms at both ends. And one of my tall patients couldn't fit. He had to put his feet up on the other arm. And my supervisor at the time told me I must have an unconscious resistance to becoming an analyst because I hadn't gotten an analytic couch. Now, he made me confused and a bit embarrassed, especially because I thought the reason that I didn't have an analytic couch was that I was just starting out and I wasn't able to afford a fully finished office with a specialized and, quite frankly, highly expensive piece of furniture right off the bat. There were multiple reasons, maybe, why I didn't get a couch, but reality certainly was a big one. And as Freud said, sometimes a cigar is just a cigar. Now, I really wanted to do this episode on the principle of multiple function because I find that it's really helpful for people to think about when they think about their own motivations and conflicts and try to decide how to act. But I have to confess, when I started getting ready to do this, I actually thought the principle of multiple function was the idea of another analyst, Hans Lowald. And I felt like the analyst Glenda Jackson in Christopher Durang's play Beyond Therapy. And in the movie, she says to her patient, played by Jeff Goldblum,
"I thought you were someone else's whole session. I'm sorry."
But it is like when you read about those one-hit wonder bands or someone that you thought was someone else, and you find out that they have an interesting story too. And that's the case that I found with Robert Welder. So he was born a precocious child, born in Vienna in 1900. He was a math genius, and he read Goethe at age 5. And as a teenager, he patented a process for making charcoal more absorbent. He was really a Renaissance man or boy. He was so intelligent, he was taken out of school to be tutored privately, and he got a PhD in physics when he was only 21. And here, I would like to say to the teenage prodigies, the few that I have seen in my own practice in math and science, who keep telling me that psychotherapy is stupid, and I want them to listen to what happens next. At 22, Welder could no longer work. He had a writer's block, and he asked Freud himself to analyze him. And after his analysis and his experience with Sigmund Freud, he moved from the physical sciences, from his field of physics, which he really was a prodigy in, to psychoanalysis. So in psychoanalysis, we may not be figuring out how to fly to the moons of Jupiter or make the fastest computer processor, but sometimes this stuff is useful. On the Psychonauts show, we also try to apply these ideas to the larger world and society. But it turns out I didn't have to do any more work to link the principle of multiple function to larger things that are going on now, because Welder himself very much wanted to use psychoanalysis to solve world problems. So what I want to do is look more into his own story and see what he can tell us about things that are going on today. Now, back in the 1930s, an Australian diplomat by the name of Hessel Duncan Hall reached out to Welder to talk about how psychoanalysis might solve some problems in the world that he was working on. And at the time, he was very concerned with limiting the illegal narcotic production that was a big problem then. And that's basically the same thing as the opioid crisis now. Narcotics and opioids are the same thing. You know, some things just never change. But together they worked on a paper and presented it. It was called The Psychological Aspects of War and Peace. And they presented it to the League of Nations in 1939. The League of Nations was the predecessor of the UN. But Hall was just one of a group of diplomats and scientists who believed that there was a scientific reason that could be discovered for war, and they turned to psychoanalysis for answers. Albert Einstein, you know, another physicist who found value in psychoanalysis, invited Freud to have a conversation about this. I just think, wouldn't that be something to have been present at? Albert Einstein and Sigmund Freud in a conversation about how to solve the problem of war. Clearly, this was a time of great optimism when thinkers felt that they could really make a difference and it was worth doing so. And in this conversation, Freud said, "Anything that encourages the growth of emotional ties must operate against war." It's really quite simple for all of Freud's theories and the Psychonaut show kind of getting into things that seem esoteric. At the bottom, he had a very simple solution. Things that make us feel connected as humans is the answer. And it is like Welder's idea that love is the best solution to all of the demands of the principle of multiple function. It was the belief in Eros, the life instinct, over Thanatos, the death instinct. And Freud had tried himself to use psychoanalysis to understand the rise of Hitler, which was a brave undertaking for a Jewish intellectual who ultimately had to flee the Nazis. In his paper on group psychology, he developed this theory that the group causes everyone to sink to the lowest common denominator because the individual relinquishes his capacity for rational thought so that he can be a member of this group, something larger than himself. And I think of this as sort of the original deal with the devil, selling one's soul. The leader becomes the stand-in for the individual's ideal self, so that the individual doesn't have to deal with the reality of being an imperfect person. But unlike the policymakers and the diplomats and the other scientists, the psychoanalysts were pessimistic about being able to solve world problems. Welder wrote that people find maturity burdensome, and Freud himself thought his conversation with Einstein was sort of superficial and not that helpful. And Ernst Jones over in London, the head of the psychoanalytic group there, said that the individual consciousness was what psychoanalysis was about and that the group doesn't have that. They had just general doubt that we could ever overcome our irrational selves. And if there was such a thing as peace, it would really only be what they said, a permanent state of warlessness guaranteed by fear. Not really peace. And in fact, that is what happened after World War II. That's basically a description of the Cold War. And the work that Welder and Hall presented to the League of Nations was basically ignored. And then World War II happened. And the hope that humanity would ever find this bright and shining rational solution was dashed. Welder's sad personal story reflects this pessimism. He was a quiet sort, the type who always marched to his own drummer. And this probably caused him problems throughout his life, fitting in with what was expected of him in the psychoanalytic community. He fled from Austria to London, as many psychoanalysts did before World War II, but he never ingratiated himself with the leaders in London. And he had problems there fitting in, so he tried moving to America, to Boston. But he didn't have much luck there professionally, fitting in with the community. And finally, divorced and alone, he moved to Philadelphia. He tried to make ends meet. He began talking to groups outside of the psychoanalytic field. And in that, we here on the Psychonauts show have a lot in common with what Welder was doing. And I want to focus on one of the talks that he gave much later in his life. He died only a few years after. It was 1963. And like in the 1930s Europe that we were talking about before, and like now in our country, it was a time of social and political upheaval. And his talk was about liberals and conservatives. And he said in his talk that the definition of what liberal and conservative was confusing. And I think, again, it's as if nothing has changed. The definitions are still confusing. It seems that what we're calling conservatives, and a conservative is someone who wants things to stay as they are and trusts that things will go in the direction that they're meant to do, is really what we should be calling a reactionary, someone who wants things to go backwards.
Traditional conservative values.
Conservative? You think you're a conservative?
Yes, ma'am, I do.
I've seen conservatives up close. You're not a conservative. You're a reactionary. You use fear and the fantasy of a time that never was, when people left their doors unlocked.
That was Mayor Winningham in Ryan Murphy's American Horror Story, and I think that's a brilliant description of what the problem is around these definitions. But for Welder, who was a refugee from Nazi Germany, he knew very well these problems that the totalitarianism of the right brings to society. But he was actually even more critical of the left. To the conservative, he attributed, quote, the everyday sins of the infant in the nursery, meaning at their worst, conservatives were greedy and egocentric and uncaring.
Anyway, I've got the two Scottish castles, I've got the Greek island, and I've got 15 Maseratis, all classics, of course. So I suppose you could say I'm stinking rich.
excuse me, the baby panda, is it fried in honey?
Of course not.
That was a punk British 1980s unsung movie, one of my favorites, Eat the Rich. But the sins of the liberal, he said, were, quote, the acquired perversions of the mind. For the liberal, abstract ideals become more important than the real human being. And he said, psychoanalysis knows no perfect human. The very fact that the idealist's expectations cannot be realized releases the worst of human nature. Recently, a 14-year-old boy told me about trying to get to his basketball practice. Now, this kid was a very dedicated kid with a strong vision of wanting to be excellent in his sport, outstanding. He woke up early to do his conditioning training with his coach, went to school, and then after school would practice for hours, trying to improve and be his very best. But on this particular day, as he was going from school to practice with his basketball, he was blocked by a Me Too protest. He tried to get through. He wanted to get to his practice. But they yelled at him and said he must hate women, and they tried to take his basketball away, and they said he was part of the patriarchy. Now, I've talked to many women since then about this, and they always are surprised that this could have happened. Women would do this, they say, and they say that he must have done something, or it was just a one-time thing. He is an outlier. But I have to tell you that I know a number of men and boys, and it's not a one-time thing. Now, I don't know whether this boy could have gotten through the protest in a better way, but the fact is he was 14. He was a boy. And as Welder said, one of the sins of the liberal is that there is a defense of some underdogs, but not others. Now, I have to mention another example of what I see as one of Welder's liberal sins. You might have seen the Australian comic Hannah Gadsby. She's very funny and very intelligent. But at one point in her last show, Nanette, she pulls the plug, not just on the show, but on her whole career in comedy. She says she's been making people laugh and it's wrong. She's been hiding the truth. She gets very serious and very angry.
This is why I must quit comedy, because the only way I can tell my truth and put tension in the room is with anger.
And she talks about her own rape and her history of sexual abuse as a child. And she says she is now putting white men on notice.
To the men in the room who feel I may have been persecuting you this evening, well spotted.
And I know a lot of people applauded her and thought she was brave. And perhaps she was brave, but in my view, she was wrong. She not only attacked a group of people in her audience who had, forget the fact that they had paid her money, but they were there to hear her thoughts and her jokes. But she attacked them, and she, more importantly, attacked the transitional space, that almost sacred psychological place where we all need to go for a respite from the demands of reality. She let her audience know that they were not safe at her show. She betrayed them. They thought they were at a performance, but it was an act of vengeance. Gender has become moralized right now into the bad patriarchy and the good feminism. These are those perversions of the mind, the abstract ideas that Welder talked about. This is not the basis of equality. But Welder was measured about any influence that psychoanalysis might have on the direction that society goes in. And here on the Psychonaut Show, we do try to take these concepts and shine a light on what is going on so we can think about them more. But I do have to agree with his measured attitude here. Wanting things to be different, he said, seems to me like a person who stands before an avalanche and wants things the way they were before the avalanche. Make America Great Again is an avalanche, and Me Too is an avalanche. They're forces of nature. We have to accept them like a force of nature and ride them out as best we can, and then we'll see what we have when they're done, and then we'll build upon that. So what is the lesson here? On a personal level, the principle of multiple function allows us to look at motivations we are uncomfortable with, like feeling that we want to show off or feeling that we're acting out of anger, and to actually put these motivations in perspective, not repress them, but realize that they are not the only or the real reason. We can then get ahead and act with confidence and clarity about why we're doing what we're doing. The caveat is don't look for motivations that aren't there, like my supervisor did with my couch. And there's more than one motivation for everything we do. And these motivations can even be at odds with one another. And really, that's kind of beautiful, the way the mind finds solutions to these competing motivations. Even if the solutions aren't always the best, or if they cause us trouble, whatever we are doing is the best solution we've come up with at that time. So we have to respect it. But what about these issues that come up on the social level? Despite his measuredness and humility, Welder did offer at least an image of a solution. He described the approach of the liberal as that of an engineer, someone who sees society as a machine that can always be improved by retooling and fixing. The conservative, on the other hand, is a gardener who sees society as something that will grow on its own and should not be tinkered with too much, except for the occasional weeding and making sure it gets enough water. Welder suggested that being a scientific gardener might be something to strive for, understanding there are forces of nature that are larger than we are and nothing can be perfect. When the avalanche comes, we have to wait for it to settle and see what's left. But then we can actively think and observe and use rational thought to create the optimal harvest. Quick special announcement. If you would like to talk with me, Dr. JKB, on the Psychonauts show about a problem or a question that you have in your life, so that we can use some of these psychoanalytic concepts to bring clarity, we're looking to do an episode in this season upcoming where I and a listener talk and converse about how to apply these concepts in everyday life. So if that sounds like something you'd like to do, go ahead and reach out to us. Since we are exploring together, you make the journey all the richer by subscribing to the show on iTunes. And even better, if you also leave a rating, it helps others to find us. If you have a story about how the concept in this episode helped you figure out something in your life, send it in, please. You can also find me on Facebook and Twitter at Psychonauts Show. Show notes are on the website, thepsychonautshow.com. And if you leave me a question, it may well be an inspiration for an upcoming episode. Until our next trip, judge nothing, question everything, and remember, there's always a reason. Bye for now. All the patient stories presented on the Psychonauts show are created by me to illustrate an idea. Any resemblance to actual people is purely coincidental. The Psychonauts show was created and produced by yours truly, John Burton. Art and web design by Hunter Creative. Post-production and sound design by Julio Gonzalez of Zimmer Media. Zimmer Media can be found online at zimmer.co. That's Ximer.co.